True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Von Dean. This is the story of the murders of the Griego family. My name is Eric Carter Von Dean, and this is True Consequences. Another tenant named Anthony was also interviewed. He had known Greg from being in jail and was renting a place on the same property that the Griegos owned. He moved to Albuquerque to clean up his life. Greg took Anthony under his wing and was helping him with a place to live as well as some spiritual advice. Anthony was asked about the Griego family, and he shared that the kids were rarely outside and that the mom, Sarah, didn't talk much. Anthony confirmed that Greg would often walk around shirtless in the yard with a shotgun in his hands. This made the other neighbors very nervous. Anthony said there were some strange behaviors that he noted from Nehemiah as well. Let's listen as Anthony describes these behaviors.
Detective Kyle,
Anthony Ross.
Thanks for coming down, Anthony. So you had a rude awakening tonight.
I'm still shocked. I only heard pieces. I really don't know what happened.
Okay. How long have you lived in town?
I've been here 2 years.
2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what brought you to Albuquerque?
I was on drugs, and my brother used to drive trucks here.
Mm-hmm.
So I came to stay with him, and he got another job, and I just stayed. And I'm doing better. I've been clean for 2 years.
Good for you.
So, I like it here. I'm doing better.
Good for you. You work here?
I get disability.
Okay. All right. How long have you lived on Long Lane?
Since November 20th.
November 20th?
Of last year.
Oh, not too long.
No.
Where'd you live before that?
I stayed at Joe Junction. My wife and I stayed at Joe Junction.
So how did you... Are you related to the family... On Long, how did you come to get in contact with
them? I was locked up last year,
mm-hmm.
and the pastor, the man who owns the property, he was the pastor of the jailhouse, and he used to come, and I was in God's plot, and he'll come 3 or 4 times out of the week, and he seen that I was wanted to come close, come closer to the Lord, so him and I got like this, and before he... before I got out, November 11th, he gave me his card, and actually I met him. I don't know if you heard of this before, but they had it at Noonday,
mm-hmm.
from ex-military people,
mm-hmm.
and they have a group every year come, and I seen him there, and I asked him, could I have his number, and I called him, and he had already told us that he had property, and he told me to come on out, and when I looked at it, I was like, I got to have some place to stay. And I've been staying there since November 20th.
Okay. And where do you live on the property? I understand it's a pretty large property.
Okay, you got the big house, and you got a small guest house to the left.
Do you know directions east, west, north, south?
Let me see. Right here, this way.
Okay.
And then I stay in a barn. In the back, it's a big old large barn, and okay. It's converted to like a 2-bedroom house.
Okay. And you live back there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You live back there alone?
Me and my 2 cats.
You and your 2 cats. All right. And what is the pastor's name?
Greg. Griegos, if I'm pronouncing.
Griegos?
Yep. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. And... Were you familiar with the rest of his family? Did you have much interaction with them at all?
They stay close in. The kids don't even go to school. They stay. That's what me and the neighbor who moved out, Mike, and his sister, the one that came down with us, it just was odd. They wasn't going to school. And, the only time we see them when they run out, the 2 little boys, mm-hmm. when they run out and check the mail, the mama, she don't talk.
Okay. So have you had any interactions with any of the other family?
Oh yeah, we went. They had a plumbing problem 2 days ago. So mm-hmm. Mike and I went over there, and we talked to try to help fix it, but we couldn't. And he called a plumber that was there Friday, and he was there today. This morning he was there. But other than that, you know, I go and talk to the pastor. I was going today, Friday night meeting where they have prayer, mm-hmm. and I just stopped going because I just felt funny, you know. It wasn't all he say he was when I was locked up, and when you locked up, you just need something. You need somebody to like a daddy figure, mm-hmm. and I thought that's what it was. But when I got out and all the neighbors, you know, say what he do, you know, walk around with his shotgun, with his shirt off. And, you know, he never did it towards me, but, you know, all the neighbors, none of the neighbors like him.
And this is Greg you're referring to, correct?
Yeah. He got that California gang member all on his chest, all right here.
Okay.
The one that be on TV a lot.
Okay. Did you ever see him walking around without a shirt on with a shotgun?
Uh-huh. But as soon as I moved back there, my neighbors told me. Even the lady who came out with her, they the one seen it, and it freaked her out. But he was cool with me. I just collect rent. When I found out that he was, you know, acting away, because see, I'm on probation.
Okay.
And my probation officer is Chris Stanley. And Chris told me if I stay there, you know, another 4 or 5 months, that I can be released early, you know, as long as I do good urine and, you know, because he just wanted me in a stable place. So that's only thing keeping me there is I can get off a year early on my probation. But, you know, he was a type of man that, you know, he'd get the mail and hold it for 2 or 3 days. When we not there, he'd go inside of the house, you know. Cause I lay something down, you know, before my wife moved out, I lay something down and come back, bathroom lights on, and you know, this is moved, and Mike and his sister the same way, you know, come in and turn the furnace off. 2 days ago, his wife came in and turned the furnace off.
Off?
Off.
Okay.
Cause he think that you know he's saving energy because I figured he's paying for all the electricity.
Okay. All right. You know his wife's name?
Sarah. I know she said they've been here 12 years, but I know he's from California, but I don't know what part. But they've been in New Mexico for 12 years, that's what she was saying.
Okay. Do you know any of the kids' names?
No.
No? Okay.
They's not acting with none of us.
Okay. How many kids have you seen around?
The baby, another one. A little boy got to be about 8. He got to be like a 13-year-old, around that age. He always wears military clothes. That, you know, that's all he wear.
So, you said the baby. Is that a boy or a girl?
It's two girls. The one baby got to be about 2. Cause she don't talk good. Then there's another one got to be about maybe 6.
And that's another girl?
Mm-hmm. Then they got a boy, which is very intelligent. He is, got to be about 9. Then they got a big boy, got to be about 13, 14. That's one that ain't real funny, though, the big boy.
And we're going to continue listening to Anthony as he talks about seeing something suspicious.
Mm-hmm. He acts real weird. He get out there. They got Noma Pinscher, right? Mm-hmm. He get out there and have a night with him and be doing the dog. He practices on the dog. And then he.
What do you mean? Like, what do you do?
He have a knife, you know, be practicing trying to cut, you know.
Like, has the blade open on the dog?
Oh, yeah. We see that. It freaked me out. And then, you know, he did it on his little brother. And Mike was saying, you know, what are you doing? You know, oh, I'm just practicing.
When was this?
It had to be back in November, October.
The last two interviews that I want you to hear are Justin Marbury and Eric Lamb. Let's hear Justin Marbury first.
Why are you here? How did you find out about everything? What's your relationship to what's going on?
It was in the middle of our Saturday night service. Actually, I probably just seen you dedicate your child. And Jonathan Cotton Steady and Johnny Corman, both leaders in student ministries. Mm-hmm. They kind of came into the foyer where I was at Calvary and said that Nehemiah had told a woman, his girlfriend's grandmother, her name is Joanna White, that his family was dead. That he had told her that sometime today. And so service had already started. They thought he was in service. So as soon as service was over, I went looking for him just to try to figure out, you know, why he was saying this. And it just seemed so bizarre.
Right.
So once I found him in the bookstore, I just kind of quickly confirmed. So Joanna, you know, is telling people that you said to her that your family's dead. Is that true? And he said, yeah. Wow, Nehemiah, that's a big, you know, that's a big deal. Can you come to my office? Let's talk. And so brought him back to my office at church and just kind of asked him again. And so when did you, you know, at this point, I'm still thinking this can't be true. I mean, something happened with him. He's, you know, just, he was not, he just didn't act, he wasn't acting like somebody that I would think had just lost their whole family,
right,
or most of it. And so I didn't think it was true, and so I was trying to figure out how can I find out if this is real or not. So I called his dad, Greg, called his number, because I have his number.
Mm-hmm.
Just went to voicemail. I think I called couple other people that I thought might have been in touch with them. Nobody answered the phone. So then I called Vince Harrison.
Okay.
Because he's the head of our security at Calvary, and I figured if anybody would know what, you know, the best way to go about this, he would.
Okay.
So after Nehemiah's in my office, I called Vince. Vince said, all right, let's, I'm at home. Vince lives in Taylor Ranch. Said, let's meet at the McDonald's at 4th and Montaño. Bring Nehemiah, and we'll meet there. I'll talk to him a little bit. If it seems, you know, if I think, you know, unless I think he's just lying, then we'll head down to the South Valley to his parents' house. And so that's what we did. I dropped my girls off at home. They were with me. I dropped them off. We live right by Calvary. So I dropped them off, and Nehemiah and I went and met Vince at the McDonald's at 4th and Montaño. I suspect that was about a little after 9. And Eric Lamb, another pastor, followed me to the McDonald's and also parked his car there. I parked my car there, and we all went in Vince's vehicle. Vince, Eric Lamb, myself, and Nehemiah.
And Nehemiah's with you?
Yes.
Riding with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. He rode with me from church in my car to the McDonald's, and then we all got in Vince's car.
Okay.
I asked him some questions about what happened. He said, I said, what, you know, when did you see, when did you find, because I just thought, I'm just going to ask him what he says has happened, so... He said Friday morning, yesterday morning, between 6 and 7, that he came home. I think he said a friend brought him, because he doesn't drive. Dropped him off at home, went inside, and that's when he saw his family. He said he saw them shot. They were all dead. And he said he found some. He would recognize some empty casings, 223 shotgun and an F-22, I think is what he said. And that there was, for some reason, he mentioned a shotgun leaning against the bed.
Nehemiah said he was dropped off Friday morning. You said 6 or 7 a.m.
Yeah.
By a friend. Did he say where he had come from?
No, he didn't. I didn't ask. No, he didn't.
Okay. Did he say who this friend was? Mm-hmm. Okay. I know you said it's been a very long day. I know you're still coping with the loss yourself.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you can think of that Nehemiah might have said that maybe I missed?
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't, nothing's coming to mind. I mean, I asked him, so what do you think happened? Vince asked him the same thing. He said that all he knows is that, he thought, you know, his past had come back to haunt him. Come back to get him. So, for some reason, he thought it was something from his past. Because Greg, it was common knowledge that in the distant past, Greg was in gangs, and he was, you know, he had a different life. But that was so long ago that, you know, I wouldn't think that. That would happen, but Nehemiah did say that.
Now let's listen to Eric Lamb.
I know I just told you Detective Kyle Woods.
Yes.
And it's Eric Lamb, correct,
That's
sir?
That's correct.
Okay. What is your involvement with all... Well, let me start with this. I'm sorry for your loss. I know that you... knew the family, knew Nehemiah,
Greg,
and I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
I realize there's a personal loss there. So. How did you come to know about any of this?
It was after service tonight. I was talking with a couple on the side, and Justin passed by a couple times. Then he paused and said he needed to see me up at his office. It was something urgent. And so I finished talking with this couple, separated from them, went to the front desk, met Justin there, and then kind of pulled me over to the side and told me what Nehemiah had shared with him, that he had gone home and found his family dead in the house. And so I said, wow. And so we were talking about, well, what's the best course of action? And no offense has been over our security there at Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
No his connection with APD. And so I said, well, let's call Vince right away. Also, Bobby's the overseeing pastor of the security ministry, so I put in a call to him right away as well.
Okay. You called both Bobby and Vince?
Let's see, Justin was calling Vince, and I was texting Bobby.
Okay.
To see if they were on campus, because you see, they're on campus with the security team.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what took place from there?
From there, went upstairs with Justin to his office, and there was, I guess, John Cottonsteady and Nehemiah were sitting there in the office. And I just put my arm around Nehemiah, just kind of comforted him a little bit and just, you know, tried to console him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't distraught in any way, but held himself together really good. And from there, just waited with Justin to hear back from Vince. I guess when we did hear back from Vince, he coordinated to meet with us from 4th Street down here. Where we met, and then from there went over to the crime scene on the way. We thought it was important to call APD, have them come and investigate and check it out before we got there. So as we made the turn to go toward the house, we pulled over to the side and called APD. asked him to come on out to the house. So we just there. From there, we went on around the corner to the house and just sat and waited.
Okay. Did you drive separately to the address, to your meeting place on 4th?
Yes, we drove separately. I followed Justin. He dropped his girls off at home and proceeded to the towns.
Okay. And then did you all drive together? Did you drive separately?
We drove together in Fitz's truck.
And Nehemiah say anything to you either in the office or on the drive from McDonald's to
we were just trying to confirm, you know, are you sure that you saw this? Are you absolutely sure? Are you sure it wasn't mistaken in any way? You know, because it he just seemed to be too composed to you know, to be really alarmed. I mean, if he was really broken and crying, he'd say, oh, wow, something serious has happened here.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to be pretty collected. So, are you sure? Are you sure?
And what was his response?
So he said, yeah. And just shared with us that, I think he said, like, 7 o'clock yesterday morning, he had gone home. And when he opened up the door, he saw his dad there. Then he went upstairs and he saw his mother and sisters dead, brother. Then he came back down. He said he picked up some 22 shells as well, too. And from there, he went to his girlfriend's grandmother's house or something there. And stayed, I guess, overnight. And then had come to church tonight. And I guess had shared with these other young men. I guess God instead he brought it to Justin's attention, and then Justin brought it to my attention.
Okay. He said he picked up some 22 shells.
Yeah, he said when he was in Alice, he saw some 22 shells on the floor, and he had picked them.
Did he say where that was?
No, he didn't say where that was.
Okay. He mentioned that he came home early. You said yesterday morning. Would that be Friday?
Yeah, Friday morning about 7 o'clock.
Did he say where he came from?
No, he didn't say where he came
from. How he got there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I don't think we even asked or inquired of that.
Okay. What can you tell me about Greg and his family? Who are they?
Beautiful family. Greg's a big teddy bear. He's a very sensitive, very loving person, forgiving person. Pretty much at Calvary, he was stayed to himself, you know. But loved his family, you know. Had his family with him all the time. Just a beautiful person, beautiful family.
Had you ever been out to their house before?
Never been to their house before.
Okay. And what part of the church was Greg involved with?
He was involved with prison ministry. Like the rest of us, counseling. That's about all of his activities.
Okay. And I've been advised that had ended at just some point.
Yeah.
Do you know when that was?
I don't know the date that was, but I do remember that they had closed that ministry. And I guess he was going to see what else he was going to get into.
Okay, so they closed the entire ministry down?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Do you have an idea?
I know God's father, him that he was working with.
Do you have any idea if this was... you said just recently, we talking like a week, a month, 6 months,
no,
a year?
It's been quite a while. I'd say pretty close to a year.
Okay.
Specifically, but quite a while.
Okay. And was there controversy around this closing this ministry? Was there?
I know that he was kind of upset that it was closing, but I think that was something he was working on the side with, I guess, the system.
Okay.
He's pretty active with that, trying to find out why, try to reinstate it or whatever. He's maybe out for the details of it.
To your knowledge, was it, you said the system, was this the prison system that closed it down that you know of?
I don't know. I don't know specifically who shut it down or what the details of it all were, but I know that he was trying to work out to understand why. And,
okay. So you've heard all about what happened on those days. You heard from Nehemiah and you heard from those people who interacted with him, including his girlfriend's family. So as a result of all of this investigation, Nehemiah was brought in front of a grand jury, and I'm going to read you the charges that were brought against him. Count 1, first degree murder, willful and deliberate. Second degree murder, firearm enhancement, and manslaughter, firearm enhancement. That on or between the 18th day and the 19th day of January in 2013 in Bernalillo County, New Mexico, the above-named defendant did murder Gregory Griego with the deliberate intention to take away the life of Gregory Griego or any other human being contrary to 30-2-1. And furthermore, the defendant is hereby notified that upon trial of this cause, the finder of fact may be instructed to consider murder in the second degree contrary to 30-2-1B, 31-18-16, or manslaughter contrary to 30-2-3 and 31-18-16. Count 2, first degree murder, willful and deliberate, second degree murder, firearm enhancement, and manslaughter, firearm enhancement. That on or between the 18th day and 19th day of January 2013 in Bernalillo County, New Mexico, the above-named defendant did murder Sarah Griego with the deliberate intention to take away the life of Sarah Griego. Count 3, first-degree murder, willful and deliberate, as well as the firearm enhancements, that on or between the 18th day and 19th day of January 2013 in Bernalillo County, the above-named defendant did murder Zephaniah Griego with the deliberate intention to take away the life of Zephaniah Griego. Count 4, first-degree murder. Again, this applies for the murder of J.L. Griego. Count 5, again, first-degree murder, which has to do with the murder of Angelina Griego. Count 6, child abuse, intentionally caused, death, child under 12. That on or between the 18th and 19th day of January 2013 in Bernalillo County, New Mexico, the above-named defendant did intentionally and without justification cause Zephaniah Griego, a child, placed in a situation that endangered the child's life or health, which resulted in the death of Zephaniah Griego. Count 7, child abuse, relates to the abuse of Jael Griego, and count 8, child abuse, which is related to the abuse caused to Angelina Griego. So it wasn't until January 16th that Nehemiah Griego appeared in juvenile court for his sentencing. He had gone through the entire process of going through the juvenile court system. There was a lot of debate about whether or not Nehemiah would be charged as an adult. If he was going to be charged as a child, he would only receive mental health counseling and then be released on his birthday. If he was charged as an adult, though, he could be sentenced to over 100 years in prison. Finally, let's discuss the trial, verdict, and sentencing. Nehemiah was arrested the day after he committed the atrocities at his family home. The trial process dragged on for years due to appeals and discussions regarding trying Nehemiah as a child or an adult. Argument was made by the defense that the court needed to do more to help Nehemiah's mental health. At one hearing, his sister is quoted saying, quote, "While my helpless brother rushed to his mother's aid, trying to stop the bleeding and wiping her blood away, Nehemiah pointed the gun at his face and told him he's next. There's so many memories, experiences that my family and my children and my husband will never have with my father and with Sarah and with Zephaniah and JL and Angelina, because Nehemiah chose to make that decision." Annette Griego said, "While the case moved through appeals and judge changes, time continued to pass. Finally came the time for the trial and sentencing in 2019. Nearly 7 years after he killed his family, Nehemiah entered a guilty plea to the charges brought against him. On November 1st, 2019, he was sentenced to 7 years for the murder of his parents and three life sentences with the possibility of parole for the murders of his younger siblings. These sentences will be served concurrently, and he will be 52 years old when he is eligible for parole. When delivering her sentence, Judge Hart said, quote, "The court essentially has no choice but to protect society at the expense of defendants' continued trauma-informed treatment, since such a targeted, sophisticated treatment is not available in the Department of Corrections." Hart wrote, adding, "A sentence that addresses punishment and provides for the immediate protection of society based on the defendant's current level of rehabilitation will likely undo the work accomplished through the juvenile system and place the public at greater risk in the future. The court recognizes the failings created by the sentencing option of incarceration and would much prefer a different alternative that would allow for continued treatment in a locked setting, if one existed." This was Nehemiah's second sentence, as he was sentenced as a juvenile by family court. But the prosecutor's office appealed those decisions and asked that he be sentenced as an adult. Some family members argued that the sentence needed to be something like a rehabilitation treatment center or eventually parole and probation. Griego's sister argued against this, and in the end, the judge felt she needed to protect the public from Nehemiah. This was one of the most tragic murder cases in New Mexico history. And now, all that can be done is remembering the victims of this horrible tragedy. Gregory was born on December 8, 1961, and joined the Lord on January 20, 2013. A loving father, husband, brother, uncle, and grandfather who was a selfless servant of God who touched many lives, he overcame difficult obstacles in his own life and became a symbol of redemption and compassion for those who struggled with addiction and incarceration. He was an Army veteran who served on a peacekeeping force in the Sinai Peninsula and served in the New Mexico National Guard. He was a pastor at Calvary Chapel for 5 years, a chaplain for the Albuquerque Fire Department and Metropolitan Detention Center, as well as a veterans advocate. He is survived by 7 children, Greg Jr., Erica Griego, Annette Griego, Priscilla Garcia, Carolina Robles, Vanessa Lightborn, and Nehemiah Griego, and by 3 brothers, Richard Chavez, Eric Griego, and Richard Griego Jr., 2 sisters, Louisa Hood and Regina Griego, and by his father, Richard T. Griego, and stepmother, D. Griego. He will be deeply missed, but has joined his creator and family in heaven. Griego Sarah Christine was born on January 25th, 1972, and joined our Lord on January 20th, 2013. A loving mother, wife, sister, daughter, grandmother, and aunt, she was devoted to the Lord and her family. She was a homeschool teacher, ministered to women in jail, and was active in Calvary Chapel's Spanish and jail ministry. She loved animals and had dogs, chicken, horses, and rabbits. She survived by her 2 children, Vanessa Lightburn and Nehemiah Griego, 3 brothers, Anthony Romo, Craig Wolf, Gabriel Wolf, and 1 sister, Lorraine Yardley, and by her mother, Esther Wolf. She will be deeply missed, but has joined her creator and family in heaven. Griego Zephaniah Azariah was born on August 25th, 2003, and joined the Lord on January 20th, 2013. A faithful son and brother, he loved to play the djembe drum and wanted to someday be a lawyer. He was a spirited conversationalist with a contagious smile and boundless energy. He is survived by 7 siblings, Greg Griego Jr., Erica Griego, Priscilla Garcia, Annette Griego, Vanessa Lightburn, Carol Robles, and Nehemiah Griego. He will be deeply missed, but has joined his creator and family in heaven. Griego Jael Julia was born on April 22, 2007 and joined the Lord on January 20, 2013. She was daddy's little princess but could hold her own with her 2 older brothers. She loved to dance and cuddle and wear glittery dresses. She loved to be photographed and always struck a pose. She survived by her 7 siblings. She will be missed and has joined her creator and family in heaven. Griego Angelina Sarah was born on October 31st, 2010, and joined the Lord on January 20th, 2013. A beautiful brown-eyed baby girl with a strong will and shy smile, she loved to dance hip-hop and cried when she got clothes for Christmas. She was cautious with new people, but very attached to mommy and daddy. She survived by 7 siblings. Her angelic smile will be missed, but she joins her creator and family in heaven. Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.